Now, Jim, show this gentleman how you can dance and sing.
That's my attitude towards the Western powers. If you want to say there's no rules, fine. Don't go crying for your mummy when that comes.
America today finds herself in a unique situation. She's the only country in history in a position to become involved in a bloodless revolution.
If America does not respond creatively to the challenge to banish racism, some future historian will have to say that a great civilization died because it lacked the soul and commitment to make justice a reality for all men.
When a system doesn't work for the majority of the people, you gotta change the system.
Hello, ladies and gentlemen, this is your brother, Ryan Mertes. Welcome to this Class War Battlefield Podcast segment, episode. I have a lot on the list, so we'll see how long this takes. So, I haven't put out a COVID-19 episode in a few months. And I know you're probably sick of hearing about it, but you know, I don't do things normally, so you should expect a very interesting segment or episode, whichever one of these this turns out to be. I did want to talk to you, though, and I mentioned this in my last episode having to do with COVID-19. But I wanted to talk to you, or with you, about how we might see COVID-19. What is the grand scheme? Because I've been doing some meditation on this, thinking about this, and it became clear to me very early on in this pandemic, especially how it ravaged us, you know. There's an elder in the black community who stated very publicly that, and I know some of you might laugh at this, but you know, this is the black community. This is how we talk. God wanted Trump to be president. Now, I know to some of you progressives and stuff, you're like, no. But yes, for many reasons, God wanted Trump to be president. And I've had to deal with the possibility of this maybe being true. But I'll give you a couple of reasons why Trump maybe needed to become president. One is because Trump, as Chris Hedges has said many times before, he's ripped the mask, very thin mask, of sanity and humanity off the United States imperial persona. He's completely ripped it off. He has revealed to the world what America's business acumen and attitude really is. A lot of people have always wanted, and they've been spurred on, by the way, by right-wing media, and these neo-fascist projectors who call themselves libertarians and neoconservatives and many other different things, but they were really just fascists. And I don't say that lightly. But many people have always wanted a businessman to be president, to run the country like a business. Well, they got their wish, because Trump is a businessman and he's running this country like a business. Now, many small business people say, oh, well, that's not how you run a business. I have to tell them, and I've had to tell many of them, you're naive. You think because you have a small business, or maybe even a small business with a few different locations, you have a localized business in that case, that you understand the business atmosphere, not only in many of these cities, but in these global cities like New York City and Los Angeles and Dallas and other places. You have no clue what these people are like. Thank you to Matt Stoller for writing a book, Goliath, which I just finished listening to, which gave an impressive overview of the forces that have been working underneath this society for much of the last century to bring a feudalist lord mindset to capitalism, which I've always said existed anyway, but that's another story. When you combine what Matt Stoller revealed in his book with what was revealed a little bit disjointedly, but still revealed anyway, in philanthrocapitalism, with, and then you combine that with, I believe the book was called The Big Short, and then combine that with the interesting story from the very long book called Crashed. When you combine all this stuff and a few others, I mean, you get this idea of what the mindset, the spiritual barometer, the emotional barometer, maybe even emotional thermometer at that point, of these people are. They call themselves predators. You have a show like The Shark Tank, and we think nothing of the fact that these people look at themselves as predators and us as resources to be gobbled up, used, and tossed aside. Donald Trump has revealed the hollowness inside unfettered, laissez-faire, libertarians dream capitalism, which, again, most of these people call themselves libertarians, are really just fascists. He has revealed that. Moreover, he has revealed the structured negativity which exists in this society on every level. He has eviscerated the myths of equality and civility that has really persevered over the last 30 years. When in fact, the only reason why there was a lot of civility over the last 30 years is because people were often in a state of psychological numbing and shock. That was where the civility came from. That was where the seeming peace came from. People's lives were being upended and torn apart so very much that they didn't know how to respond to it. We've now gotten to a point where a very small group of people have stability, a very small group of people have wealth, and these people, not all of them, but a nice chunk of them, believe that their only responsibility to the broader society is to give half-decent jobs to the masses, and to provide them with ways to obtain some services that might be beneficial to them. I often tell people, if you want to know what these people are envisioning, read Naomi Klein's Shock Doctrine. You could also now read Philanthrocapitalism, which also shocks the mind. But Naomi Klein's book is, I think, a better exposition of what you need to know. Donald Trump also presents a very interesting figure for the time that we are living in, because we have to make a choice as a society. Now, unfortunately, it looks like we're kind of going to make the wrong one. But he is showing that the ideology that has governed the last 40, 50 years is dead. Not dying. It is dead. It is dead. It is walking. It is an ideology with two sides that is literally walking dead in Donald Trump. This ideology puts workers at odds with owners. It puts communities at odds with corporations. It disunites and disharmonizes everything for the sake of profit, commodification, consumption, and this thing called branding. This thing called branding, which in a world where psychopaths have captured your markets and your economies, you'd absolutely want something called branding. Why? Because branding, in its most basic form, is a lie. It asks you to believe something spectacular about something that is hollow. It is the facade put forward by a psychopath to the rest of the world to make you believe that that psychopath is just like you. And yet, none of it's true. None of it. Not a lick of it is true. You want a great idea of this? Read the books, Sociopath Next Door. Branding is a psychopath's best friend, because he or she can lie to you about who they are and you will know it's a lie. But as a human, we want to believe the best. We want to believe the best. This is what is, I think, so hard about branding somebody like Obama, because he gave good rhetoric. He hit all the great notes. People wanted to believe it. Crashing from that, from the reality that he's, one, just a man, and two, there was a lot of forces that were allied against him, and three, that he lied. I mean, that is devastating mentally and emotionally and spiritually. It's devastating. I know, because I've gone through it. Trump has revealed the deadness of all of this. He has revealed the absolute deadness of all of it. And we have to make a choice. What are we going to do now that we know none of this is real? That the ideology we have been living under is false. What are we going to do? Where are we going to go? Because we are in a just moment. Dr. King said back in the 1960s, I've been repeating this a lot lately to people, that the arc of the moral universe is long, but it bends towards justice. What he was telling you back then was that, and he made a very interesting analogy late in his life, of going along a road and being able to see where you're trying to get to in front of you, and then suddenly going around a corner and you can no longer see what you were looking at, that goal that you had fixated on, and you think that you were going away from the goal, but then suddenly you get realigned with the goal again and you're closer, much closer than you thought. We are in a period of time, ladies and gentlemen. Back in the 60s, the arc of the moral universe had not yet entered the justice quadrant on the cosmic scale. Guess what, ladies and gentlemen? That happened recently. Now, I don't know whether it happened in 2016 or whether it happened this year, but I'm going to tell you, it's happened over the last couple of years. It's happened over the last 3 years. The arc of the moral universe has not only bent towards justice, it is now injustice. It's now moving through the quadrant of justice. Where are we going to go? Where are we going to go now that we know all of that is dead? Neoconservatism, neoliberalism, that whole ideology is dead. Where are we going? That's what Trump is there to kind of push us towards. Now, we know what the establishment wants. That's Biden and now Kamala Harris. We know where they stand. They are both two people committed to that old paradigm, that old way of thinking. We have choices to make. We have big choices to make. The question is, are we going to make them? Yeah, of course we're going to make them. As a society, we are going to make them. I must say, before I step into COVID-19, after reflecting on George Floyd's death and the protests that have erupted from it, and meditating and sitting with my ancestors, I may have been a little bit too harsh. Because, yes, I am still holding fast to the fact that those who are non-racist, who are non-racist, are still a statistical minority. But it might be a little bit bigger minority than I thought. And it was an activating moment for a lot of people. And that's what the universe needed to see. They needed to see how far it stretched. Was humanity, especially the European, white people in this country and throughout the world, is there enough of you to make it worth the universe's time and effort to save you? The reason why I started with Donald Trump is because if Donald Trump had not been elected, COVID-19, let's be very frank about this, the impact that COVID-19 has had on the world would be drastically different. I'm not going to say that Hillary Clinton, if she was elected, would have kept the death rate below 10,000. I won't say that. But the ability of the United States of America to take a lead in moving the world through this crisis would have been greatly enhanced, as it was during Obama's reign. That's why I think that's another reason why I think Trump had to be here. Because, ladies and gentlemen, COVID-19, in the final analysis, I think we're going to see COVID-19 as a cry out, as a cry from the earth, from our great mother. Now, you may say, oh my God, but it's killing, like, you know, hundreds of thousands of people. Yes, it is. And that's tragic, because we love people. But I want you to think about something. Last year, in response to the backlash that Greta Thunberg endured, I argued that this beautiful planet of ours is alive. I've argued that. And I will continue to argue that. I believe that European science, if they haven't already discovered it somewhere and just tucked it away and not told people, but maybe European scientists just haven't found it yet. But every indigenous people, every indigenous culture throughout this world has said this planet is alive. It is responsive to what we do to it. Well, if we consider the planet alive, and we think about what capitalism has done to it over the last 300, 400 years, I mean, honestly, seriously, think about sometimes what capitalism, and particularly European colonialism, has done to the planet over the last 400 years. It's startling. It is startling. That's why when people often tell me, you know, humanity can't have that big of an impact on the planet, yeah, you should read some of the books I've read where they describe this pristine land when the Europeans got here and they found it and they went in and explored. It was like Eden over here, ladies and gentlemen. And I'm not embellishing. I'm telling the truth. It was like Eden over here. And that was back in the late 1500s, early 1600s, mid-1600s too. And well into the 1700s. 300 years, less than 300 years it took for us to ravage this continent alone. I'm not talking about Asia and the Pacific Ocean and South America. 300 years. Anyway, if we start with the premise that Mother Earth is alive, and we think about what has been going on over the last 200, 300 years, we think about the fact that the weather, the temperature has been rising and rising and rising and rising, which is a fever, as I explained to people. It's a fever. We have been scraping and digging and pulling and causing diseases, and this great temple called Earth, we've been making her sick. So now the fever's going up. That's the temperature rising. And as part of her defenses, like our body has defense mechanisms, one of our defense mechanisms in our body is to release something called antibodies. An antibody. An antibody. Anti-body. An antibody. Our body releases an antibody to glom onto what has been hurting the body. If there's an infection, the body will release antibodies to glom onto it, so then the other cells can attack it. Well, ladies and gentlemen, COVID-19 is an antibody. The only problem is it's anti to our body. Mother Earth has recognized the problem. It's us. Now, something interesting that occurred when this planet literally conducted mass shutdowns. You started seeing clear skies. You started seeing clear water up here. In Venice, they had dolphins swimming through. They hadn't seen dolphins swimming through in decades. In India, the top of the Himalayas there hadn't been seen in like 30, 40 years from this one town that used to, you know, be known for its mountainous background, kind of like, you know, Colorado. Well, all of the smog, the fog and stuff disappeared. And they could see it. They could see the mountaintops again. All over the world, you had amazing stories of air quality improving, water quality improving. The planet was recovering. And instead of us taking a moment and going, do we really need to be polluting as much as we're polluting? Is this the right life that we're living? We're trying to get back to business as usual. Now, there is a warning with this, though. There is a warning with this. Because, and I thought about this as soon as we started closing everything down in this country and all over the world. One of the things that was impacted almost immediately was traveling, particularly flying. A lot of planes were no longer flying, and because a lot of people were no longer flying. There was this great documentary that I watched back in 2006 called Global Dimming. And in the documentary, there was a scientist who had a theory, which was that all of the sunlight from the sun, way out in space, that was hitting the Earth wasn't actually getting to the ground. Because of planes, and the fact that they leave those wonderful vapor trails, because of planes and those vapor trails, a percentage of sun, he thought it was significant, was being reflected back into space. This was problematic because by that sun being reflected back into space, the true impact of climate change, of global warming, was being hidden. The planes were essentially cooling down or helping to cool down the planet. He had that theory based on some observations he had made and some tests and stuff that were somewhat conducted out in Australia and out in the middle of the ocean. Pacific Ocean, I apologize. To truthfully be able to know if his theory was correct, he would have to have a scenario where all of the planes over a very highly populated place, let's say like the United States, ceased flying. When was that ever going to happen? Now, he wanted to do this in the late 90s. I think you know where the story is going. September 11th, 2001 happened, and planes are grounded. He goes to work. And what he notices is, you know, within a week or so, is temperatures throughout the country had increased drastically by about one degree, which is unheard of. Now, that was going to have an impact on the weather. Living up in New York State, I can tell you that there was definitely something off that winter. The previous year, we had had a relatively chilly and snowy winter. That winter, 2001 into 2002, was not. I mean, it was warm up through much of January, and even after we did get into kind of the winter period, we didn't get that much snow. And then it dove, the weather seemed to have like a very brief, like 2 or 3 week spring period, and then we were right into hot weather. And then the following year, we did have a very snowy and cold winter. Now, whether or not the impact of not flying for a week extended beyond a year or two for the country, I don't know. But what I immediately thought about, because, you know, I'm a country boy, and I grew up appreciating not only the weather, but the sky, and you can feel when things aren't right. And yeah, I remember talking with friends of mine who are also country boys, and yeah, things didn't feel right weather-wise for a couple of years. But I immediately thought this year, when I watched us shut everything down, and I heard that air travel had dropped by like 85%, and I thought to myself, how is that going to impact the weather? Especially if it continues on for a significant period of time. And it did. COVID-19 is offering us a chance to reset. To completely reset our society, our economy, the way that we look at the planet, and the way that we look at the things that are important to us. We need to reevaluate that. If nothing else, what is important? We are seeing, because of COVID-19's impact on the economy, we are seeing that there's a generation of people who sees money and economy, by the way, economy separated from society, as important. We see there is a group of people of a specific age who are not empathetic, who are not sympathetic, who use the idea of political will as a means of stopping this society from addressing the problems which it is facing. COVID-19 is literally giving us a choice. Are we going to march ourselves into death? Because that's what this system is marching us into, ladies and gentlemen. Or are we going to choose life? I was doing some research on the flu, because, you know, everyone's trying to compare this to the flu, but truthfully, the coronavirus is a member of the same type of viruses that cause the flu. And I was doing some research on what causes the flu. And one of the interesting, and I'm sorry, I said the flu, but the common cold. One of and I was doing the research on what causes or what could bring about the common cold. One of the interesting elements that can bring about the common cold is stress. Stress. Now, ladies and gentlemen, maybe I'm reaching. I don't think I am, though. Stress. Does this world not seem like maybe in the last 10 or so years it's been a little bit more stressed than usual? I'm going to say yes. This virus has made us slow down. It has made us slow down. We have been stressed. The problems that emerged in 2007 and 8 caused the financial crash of 2008. None of those problems have been fixed. The ideology on Wall Street and in these big financial centers throughout the world, that ideology which caused the world to crumble, or at least the financial world to almost crumble, that hasn't changed. People have doubled down on it. The predatory attitude of the 1980s, that began really in the 1970s, which brought about Trump. Trump is a product of that predatory culture. None of that has changed. These people have just doubled down on it, even though it's caused horrible problems. It's caused horrible problems. And they've all doubled down on it. While the stresses at the bottom of these societies have increased. The yellow vest protests, which rocked France. The government of France wasn't even paying attention to them. Wasn't even paying attention to the demands. They weren't. Because it wasn't important to their ideology. Seriously, the book by Adam Tooze, T-O-O-Z-E, crashed. It's a, look, if you don't want to read it, I get it. It's a long book. Get the audio book and force yourself to listen to it. It's like, I think, 29 hours or something like that. But break it up. Break it up over the course of 3 months. Force yourself to go through and listen to it. And the reason I say that, because if you go through that book, whether you read it or you listen to it, and you see what actually got us into the mess that we were in, because it's a little bit more complex, even though it's still as frustrating and maddening than what you think. Once you see how we got there and then how there were maneuvers to kind of fix some of the issues, some of the small issues, without tackling the larger ones, because that has to do with ideology, you will understand why cosmically there's a lot of stress on this planet. And why that might bring about COVID-19. Originally, it's kind of funny. They said that the coronavirus might have come from a bat. And then they said that it might have come from this ancient animal, which I actually had to look up. And the thing looks like a dinosaur, ladies and gentlemen. And it's old like a dinosaur. I mean, it's very ancient. And that's not something just to bypass. Some indigenous cultures tell us animals speak to us. And if this indeed did come from one of those animals are speaking to us. They are telling us something about ourselves and about what we need. The indigenous who lived on this continent, North America, many of them used to talk about animal medicine, where you could draw upon the spiritual energies for healing of various animals. The bat is a powerful symbol when it comes to animal medicine.
I do not know much about the animal medicine of the other animal. I don't. But its ancientness tells us something about what it is trying to communicate to us. The animal comes from the desert, where it is dry and hot. There is scarcity. We are asked to reconnect to ancient principles that rebalance the human spirit so that we may be able to survive a spell where life becomes harsh, where potential for survival depends on not only how prepared you are, but how well connected to community you are. The earth will heal itself. I keep saying this because the ancestors, the indigenous folks used to say this. The earth will heal itself. She may have to get rid of us to do it, but she'll heal herself. She'd prefer not to. She'd prefer for us to live. But she will heal herself. This animal is telling us we must connect to the ancient. We must reach deep within us to find it so that we can rise above these challenges that we are facing. COVID-19 is a lesson. It's a lesson. And even every act that is being taken to try to avoid facing the reality that COVID-19 is presenting to us is a lesson. The idea of ignoring it is a lesson. Because the same people who want to ignore it and act like it's not real are the same ones who are advocating ideologies in the economic realm that strip us of pride in humanity, and then claim that they're not doing that. These are the same people that deny that global warming is a reality. They're the same people that deny that humanity can have an impact on the environment. They are the same people that deny that family values is not a catchphrase for religious zealots. These are the same people that deny that corporations are a danger to humanity and the planet. When the Texas governor suggested that old people would gladly give up their lives to save the economy, that's a lesson. It tells you how these people think about you. And now that they want to open up schools and send kids back to school amidst the pandemic, it is telling you again that what they are aiming for is to destroy the future of humanity. They care not about the future, just like they care not about the past. They are into destruction. That is where their mind is. It's fascinating. People always wonder, like, how did Europe respond so differently than the United States? Well, here's something interesting. Years ago, I was doing some research on the colonial composition of the United States, and particularly some of its early settlements. And I found a couple of very interesting articles from the early 1900s And I think even one was the late 1800s, which not only suggested, but cited information that was found proving that, in what would become the United States, some of the colonial settlements were actually settlements for prisoners. And look, I'm not trying to say that all of your Wall Street people are crooks in prison, you know, like they descend from prisoners and stuff. But I also will say that it is known that not only in the early days did England send some of its condemned, a number of its condemned, to their colonies to get rid of them, to get them out of their the actual isle. But it's also understood that from Europe in the 1800s, when the United States was actively trying to draw people to its shores from Europe, that countries would actually send the people it didn't want over to the United States. Whether it was criminals or whoever, they would just, yep, go to the U.S., have fun, see you later. That's why I think it's kind of funny when Trump is like, oh, well, you know, from all these Latin and black countries, we don't want the worst. Well, they got the worst from Europe. They did. And where did those people end up? Did they all just end up as nobodies, you know, dying off and what have you? No. Some of those people clearly made it to the top of the ladder. Some of them were given land-grant colleges and made money out west, and then probably within one or two generations, maybe even went into financing and Wall Street and what have you. I know it seems harsh, but it is true. But it is true. This is teaching us a lot, ladies and gentlemen. And I think it's time that we slow down and we appreciate where we are and where we want to go. I want to thank you guys for listening. This ended up being an episode, not just a segment. There's actually probably like 3 segments in it, right? If you have any questions, comments, concerns, you can always reach out to me. I love hearing from you guys. I am your brother, Vimer Deese. I'll see you on the next one. There's a shadow on the faces of the men who sent the guns to the wars that are fought in places where their business interest runs. On the radio, talk shows, and the TV, you hear one thing again and again: how the USA stands for freedom, and we come to the aid of a friend. But who are the ones that we call our friends? These governments killing their own, or the people who finally can't take anymore, and they pick up a gun or a brick or a stone, and they're alive.